Two Broke Chicks is recorded on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. We acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the traditional custodians of our land. Always was, always will be.
Hey Chicks, I'm Sal.
And I'm Al. I nearly forgot to speak then. I was like, oh wait, that's my line.
Line.
Who am I? Yeah.
And this is Two Broke Chicks, a show that shares life lessons because we're broke in funds but rich in life. And we are back, as promised, with a part two with Georgia Grace, aka G-Spot, who you may know on Instagram, to talk how to hack your sex life in 2024 to give and get better orgasms.
I've got my notebook.
Have
I'm
you?
Ready.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Notebook's ready.
Yeah, because we asked you chicks to send in all of your sex questions and holy shit, there were so many. Mm. So we were like, we need to do a part two. We barely scratched the surface.
Who doesn't love talking and listening about sex?
Let's talk about sex, baby. How many times have people sing that to you?
So many.
Yeah.
So is it like your most hated song now?
Yeah. You're like, yeah, ha ha.
I dance to it a lot.
What's the worst, like the most popular like sex songs that to you now you're like, I can't stand them?
Oh, Touch Myself by the Vinyls. I used to love that song, but it's just whenever it comes on the na-na-na-na-na-na, I'm like, ah.
Triggered, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. Or even Pony. Like Pony's really, yeah.
If you're
it's
having
gone.
Sex to Pony, I'm not shaming you, but I just think you could do better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's so much like sexy music out there that isn't like, this is sex, this is sexy.
Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Arctic Monkeys. Just bone to them and think about the lead singer.
Yeah, okay. So it's like dual stimulation.
No, but like the actual song, like the like bass and the drums of that, I'm like, let's go.
Mm. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But before we get into the episode, we love to start with a life lesson of the week. Mm-hmm. So what have you got for us this week?
Okay. I've actually thought about it this week, and this is probably not new, but you know how Spotify has audiobooks?
Oh, my God, yes.
It has actually changed my life because there are so many amazing books out there that I like reading books, but there are some books that I'm just like, no, this I need to be able to listen to and I'm going to learn so much more from this. Also because I really struggle to like not do anything. It's my 2024 thing to do less. But it has actually changed my trips. It's changed what I listen to. And yeah, it's helped me like get through some books that I've actually wanted to read for a really long time, but I just haven't had the time or space to.
I love that.
Have you used it yet?
Yes.
Yeah, we love it. It's so good.
Have you recommended it?
Yeah.
Okay, great, cool.
Yeah,
it's the best though. Because I love, unlike some other services that have like the free audiobooks that come with it, they're usually like the random ones you'd find at the bottom of like the bargain bin at the bookstore.
Yes.
Whereas the Spotify one actually has like all the best sellers, which I do love.
Yeah.
What's your life lesson?
What's my life lesson of the week, Sal? I think my life lesson of the week is this week I have like got my period, just in case anyone wanted to know.
Mm. I got mine too.
We're syncing up again.
I got mine 2 weeks early just to match with
I
Al.
Think my powers this month were very strong. Because honestly, I could have taken a house down with the weight of my breasts.
Yeah.
They were so heavy and swollen.
Anyway,
I'm so sorry. But I think ever since I've started being a little bit more conscious of my cycle, I'm being a bit less mean to myself about my moods and about especially my hormonal acne, because my hormonal acne at the moment is just, she's gone off. She's having the best time.
She's popping off,
sis. Like, she's literally popping off, sis. And like normally I think when I wasn't being conscious of how those two things are related, I'd be like, all this work. And what did it get me?
Yeah.
Like I'm there using like expensive serums and like consistently doing my skincare. But it doesn't matter how much you do your skincare and how, you know, amazing or expensive the products are. If you get hormonal acne, you get hormonal acne.
Yeah, it's just
like,
going to happen.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So like stop letting your self-worth rely on that a little bit. Like yes, you're allowed to be like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like what are you doing here?
Yeah,
get
exactly.
out.
You can be annoyed about it, but don't feel down about yourself about it.
And like it's still like a little bit of a process. Like when I'm doing my makeup and I see, you know, the texture and stuff and I'm like, ugh, and I'm like, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So just I think being a little bit more conscious of the things that happen around your cycle. And like on Monday, I think I was lying in bed and some plans are like falling through with friends and I was like, everyone hates me. Mm. Nobody likes me. Darling. The next day, I was like, I'm walking on sunshine because I got my period. Mm. And I was like, ew.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? It's every, but we get it like at such a regular time period throughout the year. But even in our age,
you still get shocked. Still,
yeah. And yeah. Like, what? Why is my body uncomfortable? Why am I in pain? Why does everyone hate me? And yeah. Then you're like, oh, okay, this is the, literally the thing that happens every on
month.
A cycle.
But every month I'm still flabbergasted. Yeah. I'm like, why?
Just wait for ovulation, babe. It's so close. Oh, you're going to feel so
soon. And I was like at the gym and I like was trying to like lift a heavy weight and I was like, just put it down and walked out.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
I was like, but yeah, 2 weeks, I'll be like, whoa, come on. I'm like, slay your enemies.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, what's
your life lesson? My life lesson is actually inspired by a conversation that we all just had before jumping into the studio and also a TikTok that I saw this week. And it's that the best kind of friendship is when you show up somewhere and you're wearing basically identical outfits and instead of being like, oh, you copied me, you go, oh, my God, we're matching.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's the perspective that you take. That's it.
Yeah. Mm. 20.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly.
Love it.
All right. Shall we get into the episode?
Let's talk about – fuck, sorry.
G just gets up and leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one empty. More.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
You're being lied to about libido. Not everyone feels like doing it all the time. So, what causes low libido? Because we got so many questions about this.
Yeah, this is such a common question too. And statistically, it's one of the most common reasons people will seek sex therapy or go to a professional to help them with this. So let's look at, it's often called libido, but in session we'll call it desire or sexual desire.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're referring to this, we're referring to a motivation, a longing, or a wanting for sex. That's why I don't call it sex drive, even though, you know, Google a listicle and a how-to and it'll say how to hack your sex drive. But if we call it a sex drive, then we're likening it to another human function, like a drive to survive, a drive to drink water, a drive to breathe, a drive to eat. And you can survive without sex. However, what we need to do is we need to understand it being a motivation, something that we're wanting. There are many things that can cause low libido, and actually this is often one of the first steps we take in session to understand the why, like what has either changed or what's affecting you. It could be how they're feeling in their body, and as we were kind of just speaking about, it may fluctuate for them throughout their cycle. It could be how they're feeling in their relationships and how connected they're feeling to their partner, whether they're receiving what they want during sex. It could be, but also outside of a sexual context too, how whether there's a lot of conflict and whether they're having those moments of intimacy that are sort of driving them together. But then it could be other factors, you know, things that are going on in life. Stress has such a huge impact on our desire. When we're stressed, our body produces the stress hormone cortisol. And when we're in this sort of fight flight mode, or we're activated and we're ready and we're on, we're scanning our environment for all of these potential threats and all of these things we need to do. So even if it's just, I've had a really busy work day and I need to come home and have dinner and clean the house and get to bed so I get my 8 hours of sleep, like that can be really, really stressful for people. So they're not wanting or
sex is just like another thing to do.
It's another thing
it's
to
like
do.
It's like a to-do list.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not a priority for them. And everyone leads such a busy life. Like we're so on, we're so connected. We know how social media, we know how technology has an impact on our mental health. And that's the other thing too, like how we're feeling mentally, psychologically, emotionally can directly impact our desire. So, you know, all of those things. But then also looking at things like sexual confidence, and if people are feeling nervous going into a sexual experience, and that might be what if I come too quickly? What if I don't come at all? What if I can't ask for what I want? You know, that there's so much that relies on our sexual confidence, and that can directly impact our motivation and our wanting for sex. So a lot, like it really can be a lot of things. And I just named a few of the common reasons. Mm-hmm. There are so many other reasons why people might not be desiring sex anymore. But I think what we need to do is first understand the concern so that we can then work on it. Mm. And I really love working with this area of human sexuality, because it's actually that there are so many tangible things we can do. And I think that when people come to see me, they're nervous, they feel lost, they feel like they've tried everything, but, you know, in reality, they haven't tried, you know, anything that we can really
do. They've just tried what they know.
They've maybe tried the libido pills that don't work.
What?
They don't work. Don't buy them. There's so many other contextual things you can and should be doing.
So don't take libido
supplements. Don't take libido supplements. No. There's no research to prove the impact that they have on desire.
Wow.
Often it's conflated with arousal. I mean, this definitely...
Maybe it's like a placebo effect.
Yeah. Yes, of course. And there is a placebo effect to it as well.
So like, I took a supplement. Let's get down.
Yeah, exactly. Ah. And if you think about it, it's like, okay, I want to fix, quote unquote, my sex life. Okay, I'm buying this $100 bottle of pills. I'm going to take it every day, and I'm thinking about sex, and this is helping me, and sex is front of mind. And, oh, like, I just saw my partner and they looked attractive. They must be working. Or, you know, of course, like we know placebo, we know about the placebo effect. But I've also, the reverse has happened where people have come to session with me and they've said, I have bought these pills and not even these are fixing me. I must be broken. No. There's something wrong with me. And really what we want to do is we want to make sure that we can understand what's going on for them. And more often than not, it's something that we can work on, but it will take all people involved in the relationship, not just the person with low desire. It also takes the person with higher desire too. And even that is a bit of a concept that we need to unpack, because, you know, people will say, I've got low libido and I've got high libido, but that's all about context too, like low and high in relation to what and in relation to who. Because, you know, say for example, if we're using like a desire for a snack, like I may be wanting some chocolate at 3 p.m., but my partner may be wanting it after dinner. And just because we're wanting it at different times, it doesn't mean we're mismatched and it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with someone. It just means that maybe sex is front of mind, or a chocolate snack is front of mind.
It's always front of mind.
That's so true though, because there'll be like people that really like getting down like before bed. And then sometimes I swear, like, most men that I've been with, when they wake up in the morning, they're like, and I'm like,
I need to brush my teeth.
I need to brush my teeth.
A bit groggy.
Let me spend time conscious. They always do like the spoon and then the rub.
And they're half asleep. And you're like,
well, get off.
Damn, boy.
I'm like getting a spray bottle from my bedside table being like, damn, messy. But yeah, and I think sometimes we see those moments though, and we focus on when we don't feel like doing it. And we're like, oh, I must have low libido. Like and you do feel like maybe there's something that's broken. So what are some of the things that we can incorporate into our day-to-day life? Like maybe three things people could try this week to increase their libido.
So the first thing I would do is, and this is what we do in session a lot, is understand the difference between the different ways that you can experience desire. So I would say desire exists on a spectrum. At the one end, we have spontaneous desire, and that refers to the urge for sex that seemingly comes out of nowhere. So you're just kind of walking around and you think, oh, yeah, sex could be fun right now. That we see that a lot in pop culture, but that's just one way of experiencing desire, and it's actually not the most common way of experiencing desire.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, feel like it's quite uncommon.
It's
like,
uncommon.
Let's fuck right now.
Need some sort of stimulus.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So the stimulus, that's on the other end of the spectrum, and that's what we call responsive desire.
Yeah.
So that refers to any kind of stimulus that then brings sex front of mind. So that could be receiving a neck kiss for half an hour. It could be looking at...
We start getting descriptive again. I just started laughing.
Your nostrils flare.
Is that me?
My nostrils flare. Sorry, I didn't mean to call you out on that.
Horny ball.
I know. I'm just such a visual thinker.
Yes, amazing. That, like, so this is your
she's just a horny
desire. Sheila, okay?
This is your responsive desire. That
I
is amazing.
I like to read books.
Yeah.
And so whenever someone says shit, I think about it and I, like, it's happening to
that
me.
That is amazing. That's an amazing tool. And you need to remember that you have this skill anytime that you're like, why is my desire changed?
I'm just going to put a bag on my head while we have this conversation.
You're allowed. You are allowed to be a human being.
Yeah, this is a safe space.
Can you just look at Sarah?
Sorry, yeah.
I'll look at Sarah. When you're describing, because you're looking at me in my eyes being like, kissing your neck. And I'm like, kiss my neck, Georgia. Please.
I'm also a neck kissing kind of girl.
Yeah, it's my favorite too.
This part of my body is just like, I feel like it sends something deep into my clit, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
They're all related.
Yeah. Be professional. Anyway, where we are.
So, we don't need the neck.
You can be sexual and professional.
Yeah. I am every day.
You're like, that's how I made my career.
Yeah, except I'm more like sexual and unprofessional.
Yeah, that's cool.
Also a good combo.
Yeah. Okay, so
responsive desire is any time that you're receiving stimulus.
Yeah.
So for anyone listening who's wanting, I guess this falls under the category of give us tips, but it's really understanding where you kind of sit. And often at the start of a relationship, people feel more spontaneous in their desire because it's new and it's exciting there's so much unknown. But really, actually, when you think about the start of a relationship, you are doing things that are allowing for you to be more responsive in that you're texting about the date, you're getting ready, you're thinking about them, you're thinking about flirty texts you're going to send them, you're going out on a date, you're touching,
getting all dressed up, putting on lingerie.
You're creating this context. So this falls into maybe the second part of this tip, which is create a context for your desire to thrive. So this will be different for everyone, but it's understanding what do I need in order to bring sex front of mind more often for me. And what we'll do is we'll kind of, like, I would even recommend writing this down and sharing it with a sexual partner, you know, whether they're casual or whether they're long term. But writing down all of what we call them accelerators or, things that turn you on. And this will be the neck kiss. This will be, you know, visual stimulus. It could be reading erotica, like anything.
You know the scene in Aladdin where Jafar, like, pulls out the parchment and it's, like, 72 meters long?
Yeah,
that's me. It's like my list of things that turn me on. One out of 365.
Just says, kiss me.
Tell me that's it. Gorgeous. Tell me how beautiful.
But this is like, and this is why it'll be so different for everyone.
Mm.
And then on the other side of the page, we want to write a list of all of your breaks, so all the things that turn you off.
Ooh.
And that will also, and I think people get really nervous in session because they're like, oh, I'm going to have so many breaks and I'm too much for my partner.
Mm.
But, you know, like that, more often than not, when we work through it, actually they do have the same amount of breaks and accelerators, but the breaks are just so, so sensitive. It's I'm too stressed, or I'm worried about how my body looks, or I'm worried I won't be able to perform, or I'm not going to stay present. So we just need to find a way to bring in some more of these accelerators and remove some of these breaks.
Mm.
And for anyone who's wanting something tangible, Emily Nagoski wrote Come As You Are, an incredible book. She's really changing the way we understand desire, and she has heaps of worksheets on her website. Free. Go do them.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
Homework. Sex homework.
Oh, yeah.
Love
always,
that.
Always
have
setting
fun.
Homework. And another thing I would actually recommend doing always is when it becomes stressful, and this sounds counterintuitive because often people are wanting to have more sex, but when it becomes stressful and it feels like there's so much pressure on sex, actually what we need to do is we need to take the pressure off. And one of the easiest ways I've found to do this is to set my clients the challenge of not having penetrative sex for in between sessions. So for some that's 2 weeks, for some that's a month. And I see their bodies instantly relax. They're a bit nervous because they're like, oh, but we're here to have more sex.
Yeah.
But what I find is that when they take the pressure off sex and they take the goal out of the equation, they actually do more sensual things and they start to prioritize sex more often. Because what will happen is if they're worried about their desire, their partner may say, oh, you look really fucking sexy. And they'll be like, no, I don't, because they're worried they will need to have sex.
Yeah.
Or their partner will. Yeah,
it's like you're viewing it as like a chore.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even like their partner sort of coming to kiss them or touch their body, they're like, don't touch me.
Because they think it's going to be sex.
They think it's going to be sex. So everyone starts to miss out on, even if they really want the sensual touch that doesn't lead to sex, they start to miss out on that. And their partner starts to miss out on touching their body. And then there is no context for desire because everyone's being like, don't do it. It's going to be stressful. So when we take the goal and we take sex off the cards, everyone starts touching, everyone starts, you know.
It's what you can't have.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's also kind of like what you were saying in the last episode where it's like looking for those opportunities of intimacy outside of sex and not shutting that down to only be like, all right, every Sunday afternoon we have sex at 3:30 and that's the only time we're intimate.
Exactly.
Because that's sort of the expectation and sort of like encouraging that into everyday life, which I think is really nice.
Mm.
But also I just want to touch on quickly because we did get a lot of questions about this in relation to libido. What if you're having low libido as a side effect of like medication, whether it's antidepressants or maybe a contraception or something like that?
Yeah, so I highly recommend speaking to your GP about this. There are options out there. This isn't my field, but what a doctor or whoever is prescribing you this medication can do, they may be able to look at the dosage. Yeah. They may be able to look at a different type of medication and or even the time of day that you take it. But that is so individual. I mean, and, of course, like anything that you're taking for your mental health or contraception, very different things. So it'll depend on what you're taking and also weighing up, you know, what feels more important for you. I know that some people, what they'll do is they'll try coming off it to see if that changes, but then feeling stable in their mental health feels like more of a priority for them. But this is such an individual thing that I can never speak to because it's about that human being. But speak to your health professional about it. I think that often people feel quite nervous speaking about sex with someone who isn't, maybe it's not their whole thing. And if that's the case and you don't want to speak to that specific person, you can find someone else who may be able to support you. But they are, you know, they're trained. They're trained to work with bodies. And sometimes all it takes is just a, you know, one question to open up the conversation or, you know, even you could say something like, hey, I'm noticing this is affecting my desire. Or for some people, they notice it affects their orgasm and some people can no longer climax. What options do I have? Because this is a really – sex is a really important part of our overall sense of health and well-being for lots of people. When they have a fulfilling sex life or when they feel connected to their body, they feel better overall. So it is valid that you're concerned about it and it is totally valid to ask that question. So yeah, I would recommend speaking to them about your options.
And talking to a GP about sex is the same thing as talking about your elbow. Like to them,
beautiful.
To them, it's their bread and butter. They're like, yeah, cool. I feel nothing.
Yes.
Like literally.
Yeah, they don't care. They just are there to do their job and help you. They're not judging you.
Literally. Exactly. The next question, which just made me smile because I just find it made me think of a meme, to be honest. This is why it made me smile. And it's this meme and it was like a newspaper of a horse that was playing dead so it didn't have to ride. So what are your tips for being on top?
I had no idea.
Text was like me when I have to get on top.
Yeah.
And I was like,
wow.
Who got that photo of me?
Wow. Okay, so I guess like the first thing I would be wanting to get
curious about for this person asking is, like, is it that they don't like it? Is it that it's uncomfortable?
I think there's, like, a two-parter thing. Okay. Because I think it's, like, getting on top, one, and enjoying it. But the two really common parts of this was, A, how to not get tired when you're on top, and B, how to not feel self-conscious while on top.
Yeah, okay, cool. Okay, so how to not get tired, I think that, like, first I want to do is I want to normalize that sex is tiring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have this idea that sex is hard and fast penetration for half an hour, but, like, imagine doing that at the gym. Like, imagine doing squats, like, really fast pulsing squats for more than a minute. You'd be fucking exhausted.
Mm-hmm. So true.
So we pause, we do reps, like, we slow it down.
Yeah.
It's your sets.
Yeah,
you do your sets. And I think that it's so important for us to, like, look at the research here that consistently shows for people with vulvas or women, they need external clitoral stimulation in order to climax. And sure, penetration can be really, really fun and people love it because they feel connected to their partner. It can stimulate the internal pleasure centers. Amazing. But they need clitoral stimulation in order to climax. And it is common for sex to feel uncomfortable if you're, you know, going hard and fast for a really long time. And it is common to get tired. So, like, rather than me saying, okay, go do squats on a Monday so that you can be prepped for riding on a Thursday, maybe slow it down and take pauses and switch positions when you're no longer it's no longer feeling good or you're needing to pause. Another thing, like, add lots and lots of lube. But then you might also want to try things like who is controlling the movement. So, of course, you're on top, but the person on the bottom can be moving their hips as well. They can be helping you move your hips.
Yeah.
You could even try something like a sex wedge. These are just, like, essentially sex pillows, or you could just use a pillow.
Yeah.
You don't need to go buy a sex wedge. And either sticking it, like, under your knees or putting support, like, under your bum so that you're not always having to hold yourself up. Yeah, I guess it depends on what's making you tired, whether it's the cardio element or it's the holding your body element. And then, yeah, you know, you could even try different positions, like having your hands down, you'll still be on top. But another thing is to, if you do have a vulva, just making sure, like, if in order for you to enjoy the sex, like, making sure you're stimulating the clit at some point. If not everyone likes clit stimulation, but the majority of people do need it in order to climax. So getting a toy in between your bodies or touching your own clit or having your partner do it for you.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much, like, that people are missing out on when they're just having penetration alone. But then, like, the second part to this is feeling self-conscious. And, yeah, I think this is really common. Like, sexual confidence and body confidence, feeling good in your body is a major concern. I worked with an incredible psychologist, Rashida Dungawala, and we created a free online video course. It's over at itsnormal.com that gives some basics to addressing these concerns. But, yeah, often what we want to do is we want to start tackling this outside of a sexual context so that you can feel more confident inside a sexual context. But perhaps there are certain things that you can do in the meantime to feel more confident. So if that is wearing clothes or if that is dimming the light or, you know, being
never
in positions.
Never put the big light on.
Yeah, no one wants fluoro.
But put the big light off.
Yeah.
If you put the big light on, that's one of my breaks.
Yes.
That's one of my desire breaks. Yeah. If you put the big light on when we're having sex, out.
It's yeah. And that
ruined
it. It makes sense because, like, dim lighting is sensual.
It's
like,
sexy. Yeah, more sexy. Put on a candle. Put on a red light. Get one of the smart bulbs.
Yeah. It's so literally. It feels so simple, but it actually is a really common thread that I hear from people. But then it might also, I mean, yes, you can do all this work on your own, but also naming it to your partner or or whoever you're having sex with, how important it is for you to feel sexy and for them to talk about your body in a positive way. So telling them, and like this kind of falls into the dirty talk category, like telling, asking them to say things that they love about your body, the way that you look or the way that you feel or how good you look on top, or the parts of your body, especially the parts of your body that you feel self-conscious about. And then that maybe there's another practice around body mapping, which is, you know, when we don't like a part of our body, often we won't look at it. We will hide it and we'll just completely ignore it. And as a result, we may not feel any pleasure or sensation in that part of the body. But actually, pleasure can be a really radical way to change the way we think about our body parts. And instead of it being, oh, this part of my body that's gross, like, oh, this part of my body feels so much pleasure and sensation. Yeah. So we might bring like a body mapping activity to the stomach. Like, I think the stomach is an area that a lot of people feel uncomfortable with when they're on top, and exploring the sensation that they can feel there. But yeah, this is a really big thing because it's also a social and a cultural issue. It's not just your issue that you're facing when you're in bed naked with someone. It's your whole lifetime of being told that bodies need to look a specific way in order to be deserving of pleasure. And that is just so completely fucked.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even take into consideration what people find attractive.
Yeah.
It's likely this person finds you attractive if they're having sex with you.
They're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, and I think that was one of the best tips that I've ever been given about when I was feeling self-conscious when I was having sex, is like, they're here because they find me hot. So even if I don't find myself hot, they do. Like, they're just happy to be there. And I can promise, like, if you're on top, they're not thinking about, you know, anything that you're negative about in your own mind. They're just happy to be there, babe.
And remind yourself, like, what you're thinking about when you're having sex. It's not any of the things that they would perceive as a flaw. It's how, like, hot they are, or how good it feels, or how much you love them, or whatever. Like, you're not thinking about that, so why would they be as well?
Exactly. I love that.
So we did have a lot of questions about people asking how to reinvigorate their sex life. So we wanted to ask, what are the most underrated sex positions?
How do we bring back the spice?
Dry humping.
Ooh.
Yeah, so this is...
Am I like 14?
With a counter?
I'm
telling you.
Exactly. You know that meme? It's like when you sit down in a pair of jeans and it hits just right.
Yeah, the seam hits just right.
And the seam hits just right. And you're like, ooh. Okay. Yeah,
it's a simple
thing. Buy me a drink first, Wrangler.
But it's true. Like, dry, like, okay. So if we're thinking about this idea that you've both said, bringing back the spice, often when we feel like we've lost the spice, is that you're moving into a territory of doing things that you're used to doing, or you're just going through the sex routine.
It's a bit robotic.
A bit robotic. And for many people that can be great because it means they've learned what they like. They know what
button to press.
They know what to do. They know how to do it efficiently. But if we're wanting to bring back the spice, or what I would call it in session, like, the novelty around sex, because novelty often energizes our sexual experiences. Dry humping can be so fun because you are taking time to build arousal.
If my nostril flare, ignore it.
I'm ignoring that. I'm a nostril flare.
Okay, if anyone points out me getting horny, they have to leave the studio.
The steam coming out.
Yeah, like a fucking dragon. Anyway, Dry humping.
Dry humping on the couch because you've got, like, this physical barrier between you. You can't exactly feel it just yet. You're building the anticipation. You're taking time to build arousal. I think it's so underrated. Also, missionary is underrated.
I love missionary.
And I'm sick of people vanilla shaming missionary.
Me too.
If you think missionary is vanilla, you're doing it wrong.
Sorry. And I think it's really, I think it is a sign of the time we're in. We're in a very sex positive time where everyone's like, you're allowed to do whatever you want sexually. Which, you know, if everyone's consenting, of course, that's fucking amazing. But we're kind of having this sort of reverse shaming thing going on, which is if you don't want to like put your legs in the air and have all your holes
like you
fucked,
just don't care. Yeah,
then, you know, you're not a sex positive person. That, yeah. And that's absolutely not the case. I think missionary is underrated because for a lot of people, it means that you can stimulate the areas that feel good. Your hands may be free, so you can use them. You can kiss this person. You can feel connected because you can
really
look
easy
at them.
To use a toy.
You can use toys more easily. You can get into like a comfortable position. It can be sustained for people. Yeah, I think it's really underrated. And kissing with tongue regularly. This is something that consistently my clients will say, that when I set them the activity of kissing with tongue, they'll be like, oh, we don't do that anymore. We used to do that for so long. And sometimes you just kiss with tongue and do nothing else. And it would just be fun.
It's
because
it is the best.
Yeah,
making out is so fun.
It is. We, and it's underrated.
We've been saying that 2024 is a year of making out.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the three things that come to mind for you. What do you both think? What's underrated?
What I was going to say is I think sometimes just changing the environment, like you don't need to like start putting your ankles behind your head. Like when the positions get a bit too crazy, I'm like, what are we doing? Mm. This isn't yoga.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'm an old man. My back hurts. Yeah. I was like, I'm not flexible. Yeah. This isn't fun for me. But honestly, if you're just changing the environment a little bit or like making it a bit spicy by doing it somewhere that you don't normally do it, like just doing it on the couch or doing it in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sal. She's like, I cook there.
That's all right. As long as the spray and wipe's coming out, it's fine by me, good. Honey.
But like – when you're in public and like maybe like teasing a little bit there, being like, oh, but we can't, but we want to, but we can't.
Yeah.
I find just like not doing it in the bedroom is gonna do it on the floor, do it in the shower, do it somewhere that isn't the bedroom because that's when I feel if you're always doing it in the same place, that's when it feels robotic. Mm. That's when like it starts feeling like the same thing over and over again.
Mm.
And then kissing, like just make out. And that's like the thing is, when's the last time you just sat and made out with your partner or with someone that wasn't with the end goal of having sex?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fun and you get so horny.
Yeah.
And then you just stop. And then you're just there and it's all pent up. And you can keep going if you want. But I feel like that's a good challenge is like, just try to make out and just do that because imagine, like, remember when you would be on a first date with someone and you'd spend the whole time making out and then maybe you'd leave and you were like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
You're like vibrating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I can't wait to kiss you again.
Yeah. And it just is the best. But yeah, I think those are the things that I'm like, that'll do.
Yeah.
That'll do, pig.
Yeah.
That'll do.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like kissing 1000%.
Mm. Mm.
And like, again, like, not just waiting until it's sexy time to do that. Like, have a pash that's literally 30 seconds in the kitchen and then you both walk off. Like, that's hot. Like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, but we don't have time to have sex. Like, that's fine. Have a little smooch with some tongue. 2 seconds, in and out. You're ready to go.
I love making out.
So. Yeah.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
It is one of those things that I just hear all the time. A lot of people love making out.
You know how people see people making out in a bar and be like, oh, do you need to? I'm like, go
more,
off.
More,
I'm like,
more
yes,
PDA.
Go. I'm there with popcorn and a monocle.
Yes.
Being like, yes,
happy
use more
for
tongue,
you.
Bite their lip. That's it. That is my NFL Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Watching people make out in bars.
Same.
I'm the cream
I love
that's
it.
Watching
I want,
in the corner
I want
with
more
a
of it.
Vodka lime soda being like, that's it. All right, just like we practice
use
training, boys.
Use your neck, yep.
Yeah,
that's your neck,
that's it.
Yeah, lean in.
Oh, yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, I agree.
Get a bit tipsy.
More PDA in public.
Yeah.
Like put your hand on your partner's bum, you know, as you're walking down the street. Like,
yeah, a little cheeky pinch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much.
I think just bring back, like, the naughtiness of it a little bit. I like to feel naughty.
Like you're being a bit cheeky.
Yeah,
exactly.
The best.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well. Can we wrap this up? That is a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much, Chicks, for having us in your ear holes. We absolutely – and your other holes? No, sorry.
Not again.
No? Okay.
Not again.
Thank you so much, Chicks, for having us in your ear holes. We absolutely love to be here.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for coming back on, Georgia.
My pleasure. I love
our
you
pleasure.
Guys. We love you too.
We'll make sure to put a link, links in the show notes to all of the amazing resources you mentioned, and also your socials and Normal and everything, so everyone can learn more about you. Mm-hmm. And as always, thanks to MIK Made for making today's episode happen. Bye, okay, chicks.
Perfect. Bye, chicks.
Bye.